This is New England Public Radio's Jazz Beat. I'm Tom Reaney with a podcast edition of my jazz blog, which you can find at nepr.net. Today's Jazz Beat focuses on piano legend Jackie Byard, whose 95th birthday anniversary was June 22nd. I spent a horribly jazz-deprived time in Eugene, Oregon in 1977, where the only saving grace was the Prez Record Shop, which was named for Lester Young and operated by a true believer. But over the length of the fall semester, there was only one area of performance by a jazz combo. It was led by the late Stan King of Portland, and given the subject of this podcast, it's worth noting that it featured Marty Ehrlich, who was just then emerging from the New England Conservatory, where he was a star pupil of Jackie Byard. When I flew into Boston for the Christmas holidays that year, I made sure to arrive on a Wednesday so that I could see Byard leading his big band, the Apollo Stompers, at Michael's Pub on Gainsborough Street. The band was stocked with NEC students, and even though they were young and unseasoned, under Jackie's direction, they congealed into a dynamic outfit with a fascinating repertoire. Before leaving for the West Coast that summer, Michael's had been a regular stop for me on Wednesday nights. The place was a shot-in-a-beer dive with leaky ceilings and overhead steam pipes that required spaghetti pots to collect dripping water. Students from nearby NEC and Northeastern University wandered in at night and spruced it up a bit, and the Stompers gave it a big lift on Wednesdays. As tired as I was upon my arrival at Logan that December night, I was determined to get to Michael's. But no sooner had I arrived and grabbed a chair near one of the sputtering radiators in the rear than I fell asleep. How long I spent in the land of Nod, I don't recall, but what awakened me was Jackie, who, though best known as a pianist, was playing his old standby, When Sunny Gets Blue, on alto saxophone, and right in my face. Whether this was the same method he used to get the attention of students dozing in class, I don't know, but it sure snapped me out of my slumber and into a dream come true, a personal wake-up call from Prof. Byard. When I related this to Marty Ehrlich last week, he said, "I can see Jackie waking you up with his alto. He surely got a laugh from the audience for it, and I imagine had a smile for you as well." Jackie Byard was born on June 15, 1922. Like me, he was born in Worcester, and he blazed his own trail out of town. So I felt a desire to celebrate Jackie ever since I became aware of him. I love his eclecticism, his unpredictability, his restless engagement with tradition, his humor, even his sarcasm, which he displayed in an intro to a Thelonious Monk medley at the Maybeck Recital Hall in 1991. Jackie tells the audience about some big shot who was commissioned in Paris to compose a piece for left hand, and then proceeds into Thelonious Monk's Round Midnight. Jackie's big shot rings with a Worcester-accented clarity that resonates with the kinds of taunts I heard on the streets of my old hometown.
There's a composer in Paris was commissioned to write composition for some big shot for the left hand, so I'm going to do this thing, just my left hand only.
In a 1979 interview with Royal Stokes at Jazz Times, Jackie discussed his early experiences seeing big bands in the mid-30s. My mother used to give me 75 cents to go see the bands that were playing at Quinsigamond Lake, 10 cents for the streetcar each way, 50 cents to get into the dance, 5 cents for a Coke. I would walk to the dance so that I could drink 5 Cokes. I'd stand in front of the band all night and listen. Fats Waller, Lucky Millinder, Chick Webb with Ella Fitzgerald, the Benny Goodman Quartet with Teddy Wilson, Lionel Hampton, and Gene Krupa. That would be about 1936. And I was tuning in on the radio broadcast to the big bands from hotels. Ellington, Basie, Father Hines, Jimmy Lunsford, Benny Carter. Those were the things that inspired me. I guess it stuck with me. Byard also figures prominently in a lively and resourceful book by Richard Vaca, The Boston Jazz Chronicles, 1937 through 1962. Vaca's chapter on Byard begins with Nat Hentoff's assertion that Jackie was a pervasive influence on nearly every young Boston jazz musician who was interested in discovering new jazz roots. Following his Army service in World War II, Byard toured with Earl Bostick, then was on the Boston scene from the late 40s through the late 50s. Around the Hub, he played with Ray Perry, Jimmy Bottoms Up Tyler, Herb Pomeroy, Charlie Mariano, Sam Rivers, and Jimmy Martin's 17 exponents of bebop, a band that also included G.G. Grice and Joe Gordon. He led his own trio at Wally's, a big band at the Buckminster Hotel, and was the intermission pianist at the Stable in Copley Square. He was also at the center of activity at the Melody Lounge in Lynn, a venue favored by modernists. Piano legend Dick Twardzik was often there, too. During his Boston years, two of Byard's compositions were recorded, Diane's Melody, named for his wife, and one of numerous works he dedicated to family members, was introduced on Serge Chaloff's 1955 album, Boston Blow Up. 3 years later, Aluminum Baby, a tongue-in-cheek poke at Satin Doll, appeared on Herb Pomeroy's big band album, Life is a Many-Splendored Gig. Jackie plays tenor on the date while another Boston legend, Ray Santisi, is at the piano. Byard went on the road in 1959 as a pianist and arranger with Maynard Ferguson's big band. The following year, when he was 38, he recorded his first album, Blues for Smoke, which Nat Hentoff produced for Candid Records. In December 1960, he played on Eric Dolphy's album Far Cry, which introduced two of Jackie's most celebrated compositions, Mrs. Parker of KC and Ode to Charlie Parker. It also introduced Beyer to Prestige Records, the label he would record several landmark albums for over the next decade. In 1962, he joined Charles Mingus, with whom he toured extensively until Mingus took a break from the scene around 1967. Given their mutual interest and deep knowledge of pre-modern jazz styles and postmodern concepts, they were a natural match, and the association remains the most prominent of Byard's career. Jackie arranged several pieces, including Meditations on Integration, for Mingus's famous concert album Mingus at Monterey. And most of the horn players that Jackie used on his Prestige albums, Eric Dolphy, Richard Williams, Booker Irvin, Jimmy Owens, and Roland Kirk, were also Mingus associates. Jackie is featured prominently in a concert performance by Charles Mingus's Sextet that was filmed in Germany in 1964. In this performance of Take the A-Train, Jackie grunts his way through a solo displaying his encyclopedic command of keyboard styles that range from stride to swing to avant-garde. All the while, Charles Mingus is seen beaming with delight. Speaking of routes, just as Take the A-Train was about the new subway line to Harlem, one of Byard's most impressive compositions is European Episode, a dance suite in six parts inspired by a sojourn that wound its way by rail from Brussels to Paris to Milan. He introduced it in 1964 with tenor saxophonist Booker Irvin and trumpeter Richard Williams on the album Out Front. Jackie's boyhood friend from Worcester, the writer and pianist Don Asher, describes European Episode as kaleidoscopic, a hurly-burly of urban streets in a lively excursion of shifting tempos, rhythms, and evocations. Don Asher wrote of Jackie in his memoir, Notes from a Battered Grand. He first encountered Byard at what Asher describes as a bucket of blood on Worcester's east side. He says the 18-year-old pianist was a big, heavy-shouldered fellow in blue shirt and brown pants. His eyes seemed remote, inwardly focused as he played, and his smooth, plump, sweating face glistened with ardor and tension. In due time, Asher persuaded Jackie to give him lessons, of which Don wrote, "Every Friday afternoon, I went straight from high school to Jackie Byard's house on Carroll Street. I arrived at 1:30, and when I left, the shadows were lengthening. If members of his family needed the parlor, we'd go down the street to the Sackstrom Club, a converted store that was a place to hang out and jam for central Massachusetts musicians and road bands coming through. Roy Eldridge dropped by, and Anita O'Day, Gene Krupa, Cozy Cole, Frank Sinatra. Jackie, at 18, was the club's resident luminary and official host. On nights when there were no sessions at the Sackstrom, he would lock the door early from the inside and hid practice on the ancient upright all night. Scales and exercises, random excursions and improvisations mingling with snatches of Bach and Chopin. If he knew there was someone listening outside the door, and before midnight there was often a knot of us, like kids huddled around a bakery shop drawn by the rumor that free samples might be given out, he'd slide into some whomping, way-back whorehouse piano, a big, pumping, joyous sound. In an hour of imaginations, it was like being present at a spectacular parade, hearing a whole history of the music from the New Orleans cribs and levees on up the river." Thank you. Byard returned to Boston in 1969 at Gunther Schuller's request to establish the Jazz Studies program at New England Conservatory, and he also taught at the University of Hartford, the New School, and the Manhattan School of Music. Among the well-known musicians who credit Byard as a teacher and mentor are Ricky Ford, Marty Ehrlich, Jason Moran, and Alan Pasqua. 18 years after his death, Byard's legacy remains significant and cherished at NEC. In a note to Jackie's daughter Diane, Alan Pasqua wrote, "Your father changed my life by encouraging me to move to Boston to study with him. When I got there, he was there for me in every way. It was not lip service. He was my friend and mentor." Pasqua has been in the news lately as the pianist who accompanied Bob Dylan on his Nobel Prize speech. In a comment for this feature, Marty Ehrlich said, "Jackie was touched by genius. Musicians all knew it. He was not cut out to conquer the world. We are all the beneficiaries of his generosity and brilliance." The late George Russell, another legend among NEC faculty, offered this knowing appreciation of his colleague. "Jackie Byard always personified the past, present, and future of jazz, wherever or whenever one might have been fortunate enough to experience his challenging ideas. An icon in the history of jazz, Jackie was Art Tatum, Earl Hines, Bud Powell, Rand Blake, Cecil Taylor, and Bill Evans, all in one. Yet, like these fellow icons, he was his own uncompromising, unique, living entity. He isn't a household name, but most likely his low profile is the result of an irresistible need to constantly reinvent himself, the sure sign of the consummate artist. His history, from Boston Storyville to the countdown year of the millennium, leaves us with a rich history of his music, his life and times, allowing us to experience the intense struggle of a dedicated artist to keep his essence alive while still making us laugh with him along life's corridor. There will never be another one who can take his place." Jackie is the subject of a 1979 documentary film, Anything for Jazz. It includes Ron Carter and Bill Evans speculating on why Byard isn't better known, and footage from Alley's Alley in New York and Michael's Pub in Boston. Jackie plays Charles Mingus's Fables of Phoebus and conducts the Apollo Stompers in a performance of I May Be Wrong, But I Think You Are Wonderful. Home movie footage of Jackie's family walking along a beach is seen while he plays a new composition dedicated to his mother, mother-in-law, and newborn grandson. It also shows Western Union telegrams from Earl Bostick and Billy Eckstein requesting Jackie's services. And it concludes with a reflection that could have been made only by an artist who understood what mattered most. Jackie says, "I tell my students they'll never be a success if they write like me, but you'll be a success for yourself." Jackie Byard's life came to a tragic and puzzling end in 1999 when he was found shot to death at his home in Queens. As the New York Times obituary by Peter Keep News reported, police are investigating the death of Mr. Byard, who was found shot in the home he shared with his two daughters. Denise Byard Mitchell, one of his daughters, said the family was baffled by the killing and that she and other family members had been home when Mr. Byard died, yet they had heard nothing. The case remains open and unsolved 18 years later. Chet Williamson, the Worcester-born jazz harmonica player, has been a custodian of Byard's legacy since his death. His research and writings on Jackie's Worcester background, including his co-founding in 1938 of the musician cooperative Sackstrom Club and a videotape symposium he hosted on Byard at WPI in 2001, are cornerstones of WPI's Jazz History Database. For connections to the Jazz History Database, and to see Byard with Charles Mingus, as well as tributes to Jackie by Fred Hirsch, Jason Moran, and George Schuller's ensemble Yard by Yard, visit the jazz blog at nepr.net. Thanks to Katie Wright for production assistance. For Jazz Beat, I'm Tom Reaney.